Welcome to Honest Money, your best guide to financial freedom. I'm Warren Ingram, the author of a few best-selling books, and I'm also an award-winning financial planner, and I've helped thousands of people on their journey to financial freedom. I'm not here to tell you what to do, but I am here to share my experience and the best ideas that I've learned, and I hope these ideas help you on your journey to financial freedom. Welcome to Honest Money. We've got a great episode today. I'm very excited about this because we've got one of our listeners, Chantal LaRue, who sent us a message to say she's been listening and she really enjoys the podcast, but we're not really catering to the people in their 40s who are on their financial journey. So I thought that was a great reason to invite her onto the show and punish her. Hopefully reward her question with a bit more exposure to what we talk about. And so Chantal, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Warren. Thanks so much for having me. I'm quite excited to have this discussion with you because it's the first time that money has kind of made sense to me, money and investing. Before this, it's just been a lot of bubbles in my head. So I'm excited to have this conversation with you and learn a little bit more.
So Chantal, you're in your early 40s and you've started on this financial journey, but I thought it'd be interesting for our listeners to just kind of understand your money journey so far. And then from there, we can kick off into what your questions are and how we go forward.
Okay, great. So I started working at 19 and I knew a little bit that you needed to save for your retirement, etc. So I engaged the services of a financial advisor, spoke to him, but I mean, this is 20 something years ago, and he didn't give me any information. He said, you have to do this, this, and this, and then left me, and I never heard from him again. And I'd invested in unit trusts and I had a policy, and a couple of years went by and I thought, well, let's see what my money's doing. And my money had halved. Obviously, listening now, I should have probably left it for 10 years. I'd left it for about 5 years. And that kind of left a bad taste in my mouth. Well, investing is clearly not the thing to do. I've kept a retirement annuity going. So, you know, obviously when you move to corporate companies, they assist with that. So after retrenchment, I haven't had any kind of retirement savings since. And now I'm a contract worker. So again, I don't have anything formal in place. So it's been a while since I've contributed to an RA. I do have paid up policies. So I've got a lump sum that's just sitting there. And then it was a case of paying off my debts. Travel is probably the most important thing to me. So I travel as much as I can. And that obviously sometimes goes on my credit card. So I know the case of pay off your debt first before you start saving, but I want to travel. So COVID has at least helped, but I've got that RA sitting there and I want to do something proper with it. And where I can, I've been saving some money to put into a retirement once a year. I learned from your podcast as well. You only need to invest just before tax year end. So I've got money that I'm putting into my home loan. I've got an access bond, but I want to know what to do with it. You know, is a retirement annuity really the way to go? Is a pension the way to go? I know there's all sorts of rules that have changed, but I don't quite understand them. So I want to know what's the best way to put my lump sum to use and then hopefully every month be able to contribute to a retirement annuity at least. And then, yeah, just to see if the way I'm saving my holiday money and my home loan and that kind of thing, get a little bit of advice from you there.
Okay, fantastic. And thanks so much for sharing your history, because I think a lot of people might not have exactly the same history with money, but certainly their journeys will have some of this. You know, they'll have some shared experience with you. And I think let's hope we can help you and lots of other people who are listening at the same time. So I think a couple of comments, just, you know, you're touching on a few issues in your history. So the one is about bad financial advice. And I think, you know, that's not unique to you. That's for sure. I mean, that's a kind of a common theme from a lot of people. So just, you know, just especially for people who are listening as well. I mean, I think one of the things to understand is that educating yourself about money, like you're doing, Chantal, makes all the sense in the world, even if you don't actually manage your money yourself, because it allows you firstly to ask the right questions and then to decipher, or not decipher, but let's say sift out, you know, the dodgy advisors from the good ones. Because, I mean, obviously, well, not obviously, but I guess I'm a little bit biased because, I mean, this is my profession. And I think there are, I mean, you know, over decades now, I've met some great advisors who've made a huge difference to their clients. And I've met many others that are awful, and I wouldn't, I'd only send them to my worst enemies. And so I think, when we go on this journey of money, I think sometimes using an expert, even if it's for specific things, as opposed to saying, I don't need an advisor to help me all day, every day, but I need advice for particular issues. I would encourage people to do that. I think there are times, for example, tax. I don't do my tax returns. I don't understand the tax laws well enough to be able to make SARS happy. They audit me every year, irrespective of what I do. So I always make sure I get good advice. Wills and those kinds of things. I always make sure I've got, someone that's giving me proper legal advice on that. Even though I might have studied the stuff, I don't believe I'm an expert. So I think, financial education is critical because it does help you to take responsibility for your money. But don't be scared from time to time to use the right experts. And if you've got the education that the financial education, you quickly know who's telling you a story and who's actually out there to help you. And then, that experience of someone selling you a product and disappearing is awful. I think, for people who are in that position now, if an advisor sold you something and they're earning a fee on your investments every year and they're not talking to you at least once a year, they're in breach. You can nail them, and you probably should. Because regulations force advisors to review their clients' investments once a year. And if they're not doing it, but they're still happy to take your money as fees, then my view is that's a kind of a form of theft, and you should take them out on that. So I know that's a strong view, but I think just for people in the situation. So if we go to your first question on the RA, I love retirement funds. There's always a but. So just as a principle, if someone says to me, investing money in a retirement fund, whether it's a provident fund, if you're working with an employer, a pension fund, or a retirement annuity, if you're self-employed or a contractor, I think that they offer a lot of advantages. The first big one is that deduction that you get from SARS. In other words, you kind of get a gift from SARS, which is, they'll almost give you money back. And yes, it is your money. You might have overpaid in tax on the one side, but you're getting a really, really significant tax break for making a contribution to a saving for yourself. That, as a starting point. And I think that's extremely valuable. The second thing that a lot of people don't realize is that the money you've got inside the RA, it doesn't attract any tax. So when you've got the money growing in an RA, and I think that's the first point, Chantal, it can't be halving, because then, that's not helping you at all. But if it's growing, it doesn't attract capital gains tax, it doesn't attract dividends tax or interest, tax on interest. So there's no income tax. So if you can get an investment to grow without any kind of tax friction, that's a very valuable commodity as well. The big but in retirement funds to me is one, that the fees need to be appropriate. So if you're sitting at an insurance company RA where, it's in some kind of an old school policy, and, the advisor got some big upfront commissions, and you've got this really like fixed term, the likelihood is that you're being charged quite a lot of fees. And so, the tax benefits that you're getting from the RA and the tax-free growth are probably being eroded by fees. And that's where RAs get a bad name. So it's actually not the legal structure of an RA that's wrong. It's just the product developer, the company that sold it to you, they might be expensive, and then you're getting drilled on fees, and that's just not fair. So I would say the first thing I would do if I were you is just understand what the fees are. And so the question to ask the company is, what is the jargon is EAC, the effective annual charge. And so that's insurance company language for what are all the fees that they're charging you per year on the investment. Okay. And if it's over, a lot of the time, the insurance company fees will be kind of somewhere around 3% or 3.5% a year. And sometimes I've seen them as high as 4.5% a year. Then you need to know that that's a heck of a fee. Now, your investments have to grow by that much before you actually start to get any kind of movement of capital growth. And then you have to get another 4 or 5% just to beat inflation. So fees are a critical point here. So if the fee on the RA is high, then the second thing to ask them is what is the Section 14 transfer value? So that's kind of a mouthful, but Section 14 transfer value, what you're asking them is, if you've, let's just say for argument's sake, you've got 100,000 Rand in there, and you don't want to cash the RAN. So I'm not saying you mustn't surrender it or cash it in. What you want to do is transfer it from an expensive product provider to a low-cost product provider. The Section 14 transfer value is saying, if your investment is worth 100,000 Rand, what value will they actually transfer to the other product provider? In other words, what's the penalty going to be? And that's a key number to understand. So for you, you know, if you're in your early 40s and you then, you know, you've got at least until age 55 before you're going to access that money. If the penalty is less than 6% of the value of the RA, in other words, using that 100,000, if they're going to give you, you know, 95,000 Rand of your money, and really that is the point, it is your money, but if they're going to give you 95,000 Rand as a Section 14 transfer value, then it's worth making the move to a different platform where the fees are much lower. Because what you know is that, you know, you can, you know, through a lot of the exchange traded fund platforms, you know, we're not here to punt products. So I don't want to name lots of names and give them free advertising. But if you look at, you know, companies that do index tracking, for example, and offer an RA, and there are a few in the market, you know, their fees might be kind of 0.8 to, you know, 1.5% a year, you know, depending on the size of the investment. So, you know, to take your fee from, let's say, 3.5 down to 1.5 is a huge jump. So over another 10 or 15 years of saving, you can really make up any penalty that the insurance company is going to charge you if it's, as I say, 6% or less. And then, you know, you can kind of get ahead, you know, in the future as well, because you don't have to stop the RA at age 55. That's a choice. You will decide that. So I think that's probably the first thing I would do with that RA is you want to know that the lump sum that you've got already is working as efficiently as possible. And then you can decide now on a monthly basis to then add to that RA if you feel like it. So you've got two routes. I mean, as you pointed out in your question, you could either do a lump sum, you know, let's say late January or early February before the end of the tax year every year. So you might want to do that if your cash flow is a bit unpredictable. Then you say, well, okay, I've got capital available. I'm going to put it in my RA now because I know I've got the money to save and invest. If your income is a little bit more predictable, you might say, well, let me rather do X amount per month as a debit order. And then, you know, in late January or early February, then just do a top up. You know, so that, you know, you can decide what one way or the other. But I would try and bulk that money up. So I wouldn't try and have three RAs all over the place. I would try and have one RA and then do the top ups to that RA, because typically a lot of the product providers charge you a decreasing fee based on the size of the investment. So, you know, if it's a smaller investment, you might pay 1.5%. And then, you know, if the money gets bigger and bigger, they might drop that to, you know, 1% or to 0.8 eventually. So size counts with investments. And so that's why I don't really want to have lots of policies all over the place. So I think the first point is don't shy away from the RA. I think it's a good investment to make, but you need to be in the right fee. If you're stuck in an old school RA, where the fees are going to be ridiculous for you to move it, then sure, you know, leave it there. If it's already paid up, as you said, then, you know, then start a new RA at a low cost provider. So at least you know the new money that you're going to save is not going to be eroded by fees. And then every 2 or 3 years, get a Section 14 quote on the old RA just to find out, because those penalties should be dropping the closer you get to age 55. So at some point, it'll make sense for you to consolidate. The one thing here is, do you take all the money you've got, the money you've got for investments, and put it all into an RA, or do you do RA and, or is it RA all? You know, because the one thing about money isn't only one way to do this. And so the other two things that you should consider would be, what about a tax-free savings account? Because I think that's to me a really exciting investment to talk about. So I'll discuss that now. And then the other thing is just having, you know, an accessible investment that's not locked into an RA or not in a tax-free where you've got some restrictions, you know, where you say, well, it is my long-term money, but if I do need it in 5 years' time because something goes wrong in life, you know, that's the first money I will invest. It's not your emergency fund. It is a long-term investment, but you might want to access it. So just quickly on tax-free savings, you get no tax breaks from SARS for making a contribution to your tax-free. So it's after-tax money. But again, once the money is invested, it grows without any tax. So it stays there. It keeps growing. And then when you decide to draw the money one day, you get all of that growth tax-free. And that's very attractive. The only thing is that you're only allowed to contribute 36,000 rand a year. You can't do more than that. And then you cannot draw money out and put it back into the investment. So we're only allowed to put 36,000 rand a year, subject to 500,000 rand in our lifetime. And so let's say you make 200,000 rand worth of contributions over a few years, and then you decide to draw 100,000 rand out. You can't top that 100,000 rand back. You've lost it. So to me, it should be viewed as a long-term investment. It's not something that you just build up for, you know, a deposit on a house or a car money, or yes, your Maldives trip when you decide to do that. This is separate money. This is the long-term financial freedom money. So I tend to think that, you know, if I've got 5,000 rand and I need to decide between an RA and a tax-free, I'd split it equally. I wouldn't just put all the money into the RA or 3,000 rand into the tax-free. I would probably do 2.5 and 2.5 and make sure that I'm getting the benefit of both. The one thing a lot of people will tell you about a retirement annuity is that, you know, those restrictions, where you're not allowed to access the money before age 55 is kind of people don't like that lack of access. And that's a fair point. I think that's one concern. So, you know, if people are considering, going abroad one day and immigrating, you know, then that restriction on that retirement money is a big issue. So I think it's just understanding what you want to do with your life and where you plan to spend your time. You know, if you're going to be in South Africa and that's the plan, then maximizing your retirement fund contributions and the tax-free makes a lot of sense to me.
The future of work is constantly shifting. How can HR leaders stay on top of the latest trends to better lead their global workforce to success? Serva Soundbites podcast explores current trends and the hottest topics around global employee relocation and the future of work. We connect with industry experts, HR leaders, and innovative thinkers to share their insights and stories. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your business podcasts.
Warren, thank you so much. You're helping give me a bit of a direction here. Explain to me, please, the RA. I've heard that you can't, at the age of, say, 55, when I retire, I can't get that full lump sum. Apparently, you get like a third of it as a lump sum, and then you've got to reinvest the rest of the money.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yeah, 100%. So if you want, the law allows you to take a third of the value of the RA, and of that one third, 500,000 rand is tax-free. Okay. So remember, because you've been given very significant tax benefits putting the money into the investment, there's always going to be tax somewhere along the line. And so what happens is you can decide, you can say, I want my one third as cash, or I'm happy to convert the whole amount that I've got invested in my RA into either a living annuity or a life annuity. So what happens, let's just talk about a living annuity as an example. So let's say at retirement one day, you know, you decide to work until age 60, you don't need to access your money until then. Then you say, well, okay, now I'm going to convert my RA to a living annuity. You do that conversion. There's no tax then if you're going to just transfer the whole amount. And then you're allowed to draw between 2.5% to 17.5% of the value of that investment as an income every year. So if you've got 1 million rand, you can draw 2.5% of the million up to 17.5% of that million every year as an income that gets paid to you monthly, quarterly, annually. You decide.
Sure. So that was the one thing that put me off an RA a little bit, because I'm more the person that would prefer to get my full money out. And then I'm really good at, you know, I don't spend it on unnecessary things, but I would have preferred something where at 55, I get the full amount and then I do what I need to with it, maybe invest shorter term. So from the sounds of it, it's not really an option for me. I don't have a choice with those other two thirds.
Correct. But remember that that's not a bad thing, because the money that sits in the living annuity, it still attracts no tax. So you're mm-hmm. still getting growth. That money can grow for the rest of your life while you're drawing down on it. And you've got a lot of choice inside a living annuity, because you can stay on a unit trust platform where you can say, I want, the moment you go from a retirement annuity to a living annuity, the regulations are less. That means that you could have 100% of that living annuity in cash. I wouldn't recommend that, but you can choose to do that. You could have 100% of it invested in shares. Again, for retirement money, I'm not sure I want to do that, but you've got the choice. And you can increase the offshore allocation inside the living annuity as well. So it's a hell of a flexible vehicle for people to invest their money after retirement and still be able to draw an income. So I think you've got a lot of choice there and a lot of control and lots of companies, providing a huge range of options. So the fact that you've got some restrictions, be careful of kind of wiping out a whole vehicle in an investment vehicle because there's some restrictions. The tax benefits are real, and they're very significant.
And what happens if I die before I've depleted those funds? Can I then send it to a beneficiary?
Exactly right. So okay. you on your application, you say this is the beneficiary, and you can change that at any time while you're alive. And the nice thing about that is that it goes to that beneficiary without tax. So you don't pay, your estate doesn't pay estate tax. You don't, there are no executor's fees. So it's a very efficient estate planning tool as well. But the primary purpose is there for you for your retirement. So I think be careful. Your concerns are quite popular with people, that they all have this issue around the restrictions. And I get it. But I think that, that's why I'm saying it's maybe not one or the other. It's maybe a combination. And that might be better for most of us.
No, thanks. You put my mind at ease because I learned about Section 14 in one of your previous podcasts. So I asked my advisor already to send me the Section 14 details, which they have. And I said to them, I'm not doing anything until the end of the month because I wanted to talk to you first and figure out, I haven't looked at the fees yet, but at least I know I'll keep an RA based on your advice. So thank you for that. And the tax-free savings accounts, I've heard about that. So tell me, Warren, I'm saving for holidays as much as I can. Right now, I'm putting it into my Access Bond. Does it make sense to do that or to put it into a separate account?
No, I think an Access Bond is a great idea. I think, if you look at the interest that you're paying on your bond, and I would say if you turn it on its head where you overpay, so you put extra money and you store it in there, then that's, you could almost view that as interest that you've saved. And so if you're paying, let's say you're normally paying 7% interest a year and now you're getting 7% by putting extra money in, you're also getting it in a way tax-free, right? Because if you put the money in a money market account or something or a fixed deposit, if you started earning interest on that, you might have to pay tax on that. And in the current environment, interest rates are probably only going to give you 3 or 4%. So if you're paying 7% and you can save having paid that 7%, then I like that. You already know I'm going to tell you you should be paying off your bond as fast as possible. So as long as you're paying off the bond faster and putting extra money in, then for the holidays, then that's great. And then just keep very careful track of the holiday money that you're not drawing out too much, because it's an Access Bond and it's easy to do.
Yeah, so actually even the retirement money that I'm saving to make a bulk payment in Jan is also in my home loan to bring it down. So I've got a spreadsheet that's color-coded. Even for my cat, I've got a monthly payment that goes in to cover any unforeseen vet expenses. So I've got a vet or pet insurance, but I also put a little bit aside because it doesn't always cover everything. So I've got my spreadsheet that's showing exactly what's in my home loan. I've got an in case I die file so that everybody else knows what's happening with my home loan. So I try and keep it in there just to keep that interest as low as possible. But then obviously it'll come out when I can start traveling again and then when I make the lump sum.
Fantastic. I think we're running out of time, Chantel. So I'm going to make one more comment, which is, in your when I die file or if I die file, let's say, rather make it optimistic, just to make sure that you've got a current will. That's always a key thing that people need to do. And that, again, you've done the job of telling people where that is so that it's easy for them to find. So one of the things that we ask all our guests, as you've heard the show before, given that you're in your early 40s, if you had to meet your 19-year-old self who's starting work, what would you tell your 19-year-old self now, having learned the life lessons that you've learned?
I would tell her that when she speaks to a financial advisor to ask more questions, and if she doesn't get the answers, to keep asking until she does. Because I think empowerment is so important. And in every other aspect of my life, that's what I've done. But money's just been something I haven't. And I wish I had, because I think I would have been in a much better financial position now by just asking a few questions and not accepting somebody who just tells me that's the way it is.
I think it's power. And I mean, I think the one thing about money, when you're talking to advisors of any description, whether it's, you know, accountants, financial planners, anybody, there are no dumb questions. You need to feel free to ask whatever question you want. You can't be embarrassed about asking about your own money. So, you know, I think it's a fantastic point. Chantal LaRue, thanks so much for joining, and thanks so much for being brave enough to talk to us about your affairs.
Thank you so much, Warren. I really enjoyed this, and you've really given me some good direction. I appreciate it.
Best of luck.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to Honest Money. If you have any questions, you're welcome to reach out to me on Twitter. My handle is @WarrenIngram. Don't forget to subscribe. We're on Spotify and Apple Podcast. Chat soon.